morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, October 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN called for an unimpeded flow of humanitarian supplies into Gaza Strip, especially fuel.
The situation across the Gaza Strip continues to be just terrible, and things worsen by the hour. It got far worse with this recent cut and blackout of communications that we've been experiencing.
Meanwhile, the U.S. reiterates its call for the protection of innocent human life. Former Zambian President Edgar Lungu returns to active politics to lead his party. Human Rights Watch calls on Mozambique's government to release all those arrested during last Friday's peaceful protests. Alexander Cummings of Liberia plans to announce his endorsement or no endorsement in the November 7 presidential runoff election today, Monday or Tuesday.
We cannot and we should not blindly give our support to anybody. Our support should be based on the interests of the Liberian people.
And Somalia's capital gets its first foreign bank in decades. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations Relief and Works Agency, also known as UNRWA, has again called for a humanitarian ceasefire in the Israeli-Hamas fighting and a regular flow of relief supplies into the Gaza Strip, especially fuel. This as Israeli forces expand their ground operations in Gaza. Reuters reported that telephone and internet communications were partially restored in Gaza on Sunday following a day-long blackout. UNRWA spokesperson Juliet Tuma says her agency lost contact with its staff except for a few satellite phone connections with some staff across Gaza. She tells me that UNRWA wants more relief trucks into Gaza with fuel because almost all relief work depends on fuel.
The situation across the Gaza Strip continues to be just terrible, and things worsen by the hour. And it got far worse with this recent cut and blackout of communications that we've been experiencing for now 24 hours. We lost contact at UNRWA with our staff. We, however, have one line of communications with our director, who is in southern Gaza, and we managed to get through satellite phone to a very, very small number, like four or five staff who work in the different areas across the Gaza Strip. So this came to further complicate what is already a very challenging humanitarian operation, bearing in mind that UNRWA is the largest humanitarian organization working in Gaza in response to this tragedy unfolding.
As of last week, there were some relief trucks going into Gaza. What do you know now?
Even when the trucks were coming in, the number of trucks was very, very small, and we have described them as crumbs because their number is very, very small. And the process of getting in those trucks is very cumbersome. And they were not carrying any fuel, which the organization that I work with, UNRWA, is in a desperate need for. So we need an increase in the number of trucks, making them more regular and bringing in fuel on those convoys.
Yes, because the last time we spoke, you mentioned that the need for the delivery of fuel was one of your most important needs. What does that mean for your work without fuel?
I mean, without fuel, we'll not be able to do simple things like drive our cars or go pick up those supplies with our trucks or send fuel to the medical facilities that we run or send wheat flour to the bakeries that we've been supporting in helping them to bake bread, which has become a very important staple for families in the Gaza Strip. The pumping stations that give water to people will not work. So fuel is life, and we need it desperately, and it's being cut, and so life is being cut from the Gaza Strip.
So, Juliet, what's the biggest wish now for your organization? What do you wish for to happen?
Well, we're calling for a ceasefire. It's time for a ceasefire for the sake of people wherever they are. It's time for this to come to an end. And meanwhile, we're calling for a regular flow of humanitarian supplies into the Gaza Strip that would also include fuel.
Juliet Tuma is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA, spokesperson. She spoke with us from Amman, Jordan. As Israel continued expanding its military operations in Gaza on Sunday, the United States reiterated its calls for the protection of innocent human life. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the details.
Israel Defense Forces underscored Sunday that the militant group Hamas, and not the people of Gaza, is the target of their military operations, which have now been expanded. But as more reports and footage emerge showing extensive damage in civilian areas, Israel's approach and the support the United States is giving it continues to receive scrutiny. Appearing on ABC's This Week, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan reaffirmed the U.S. position on the matter.
What we are providing to Israel is subject to the laws of war and to the requirements that steps be taken to protect innocent life. Those are requirements we impose any time we transfer weapons to another country.
Some relatives of the hostages taken by Hamas during its October 7th terror attack on Israel have expressed worries that the ground offensive could put those kidnapped at risk. But Sullivan added that there are several ongoing efforts to get them home safely.
We are prepared to support humanitarian pauses so that hostages can get out safely, and we will keep working at that every day.
In the meantime, the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees voiced worries Sunday that people storming its Gaza aid warehouses is a sign that civil order is starting to break down. The warning came as Pope Francis renewed calls for a ceasefire in Gaza and the release of the hostages, many of whom are believed to have dual nationalities. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Former Zambian President Edgar Lungu has announced his return to active politics to lead the main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF, party once again. In a speech on Saturday marking the 9th memorial anniversary of the late President Michael Sata, Lungu accused President Hakainde Hichilema of using state institutions to annihilate Zambia's largest opposition party. This after Miles Sampa held what the PF calls an illegal convention and took over the party's leadership. Government spokesperson Cornelius Mwitwa said neither President Hichilema nor the ruling UPND was involved in what he called an PF intra-party dispute. Patriotic from acting president Gavin Lubinda tells me that there was no vacancy in the post for PF leadership and that Miles Sampa is receiving state support.
President Edgar Lungu said that he has been compelled to announce his return to active politics because of what he considers to be an affront against multi-party democracy in Zambia, as is being orchestrated by President Hakainde Hichilema, his UPND government, using stooges of all forms and heads.
But Mr. Lumbinda, let me say that I saw a video by the Information Minister Cornelius Mwitwa saying that the government or the ruling UPND had no part to play in the dispute that's going on in your party.
I wonder whether you also saw an earlier video in which the same person you are speaking about, the spokesperson of UPND, and also spokesperson of the government, he was proud. He was actually bragging and bubbling with pride when he was saying he is involved in creating squabbles and division in the opposition party. And that statement was made a few months ago. So he has realized that he exposed himself and now wants to cover his tracks. Unfortunately, it's a little too late. Now, the meeting that was held on the 24th of October on Independence Day of Zambia.
Mr. Lubinda, that's what I want to ask you. Yes. Now that President Lungu has returned as party leader, what can you tell us, therefore, of this Mr. Miles Sampa, who said now he is the new leader of your party?
The recently held illegal conference was sponsored and convened by a proxy of Mr. Hakainde Hichilema in the name of one Miles Sampa, who was serving a second suspension. What was interesting was that that meeting was actually, in all standards, a state function. The whole of the conference facility was surrounded by state police with armored vehicles and had total officialdom. It was as though Haga Inde Hijilema himself was addressing that meeting. Now, coming to your question, first and foremost, Miles Sampa's activity was illegal and therefore invalid. This therefore means that he has no locus whatsoever. He is going to posture as president of the Patriotic Front purely because he is receiving state support. What must be remembered is that President Edgar Chagwa Lungu was elected at our conference in 2021 for a tenure of 5 years, which runs out in 2026. And all that has happened today is that President Edgar Lungu has decided to forestall his leave to come back as elected president of the Patriotic Front.
Gavin Lubinda is the acting president of Zambia's main opposition Patriotic Front Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, October 30th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. In Liberia, the leader of the opposition collaborating political parties, the CPP, says he will announce his endorsement in the November 7 presidential runoff election today, Monday or Tuesday. This comes as losing candidates in the first round have been endorsing either President George Weah or former Vice President Joseph Boakai. The two candidates in the runoff, Alexander Comes, had been expected to do well in the October 10 first round vote, but he did very poorly. He tells me that his party is investigating what happened, but declined to say whether he would mount a formal complaint.
We believe the results announced do not reflect the will of the people. We believe the election was fraudulent. We are trying to investigate and to understand what happened and to try to prove that. It seems unfathomable that in 2017, when I was not known by anybody in the country, we got 7% of the electorate. And after, 6 years, we got less than 2%. And so the results, make no sense to us. And again, we're trying to investigate.
Do you plan to challenge the first round process?
So we are investigating, and we will only challenge if we think we have enough proof. If we don't, we will continue the process more again for posterity to make sure we understand what happened so that we can avoid the sort of fraud that happened this time in the future.
You have met with both President Weah and former Vice President Boakai. Who do you plan on supporting in the runoff?
Yeah, what I find interesting, James, is that both the President of the Republic and the former Vice President of the former ruling party both asked for meetings and actually came to my residence soliciting my support in the second round. Typically 1%ers, 2%ers don't get that kind of attention. But we set up a process for making that decision. That decision will be based on our change agenda. Which of these institutions we believe is committed to fundamentally changing our country?
I asked you on this same program, Mr. Cummings, almost a year ago about why the opposition would not field a single candidate for the first round. And I think you said that would happen in a possible second round. Now, some people say, are you trying to cop out of supporting Boakai?
Well, James, there are some things that fundamentally changed between the time we had that discussion and where we are with regards to Vice President Boakai, his ticket, and some of the folks around him. But we cannot and we should not blindly give our support to anybody. Our support should be based on the interests of the Liberian people. And I make no apologies to anybody for engaging the two parties in the runoff around the issues we fought this election around, meaning judicial reform, meaning changing the economic environment so that businesses and the private sector can thrive, women empowerment. These are substantial issues that we believe, if addressed, will begin to change and reduce the suffering of our people. And so, yes, opposition, current ruling party or former ruling party, we want to have discussions around these issues, and we want them to publicly commit to the Liberian people that they will address these issues.
So, Mr. Cummings, when do you think you will or your party will complete the assessment, and when do you think a possible endorsement or non-endorsement of either President George Weah or former Vice President Joseph Boakai would come?
My hope is that by Monday or Tuesday next week, we'll make a decision. It's not helpful to drag this on for an extended period of time for our endorsement or non-endorsement, as you say, to be relevant. It has to happen in a timely fashion. So we're going to work towards sometime early next week to make that announcement, Monday, Tuesday, worst case, Wednesday.
Mr. Cummings, thank you so much. A pleasure always to speak with you.
Thank you, James. My pleasure as well. And we'll continue to have conversations going forward, I hope.
Alexander Cummings is the leader of the opposition collaborating political party of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Human Rights Watch has called on Mozambique's government to release all those it says were arbitrarily arrested during last Friday's peaceful protests. Mozambique officials were not immediately available for comment. Zenaida Machado is the Human Rights Watch senior researcher for Africa. She tells me that Mozambican authorities should investigate the security forces' use of excessive force and have those responsible prosecuted.
The march of the opposition itself was quite peaceful, but maybe half an hour into the march, they were met with heavily armed officers with armored vehicles, who requested the group to change routes without providing an explanation for why the routes needed to be changed. And before people even took the decision to respect those orientations to change the route, they began to fire tear gas, rubber bullets, and live bullets as well against people that were participating in the march. And then the chaos began. People were running all over the place. A lot of people got injured. Security forces said over 70 people were detained. We are still in the process of verifying how many at this stage are still in jail, in what charges, and when are they going to appear in a court of justice to be formally charged. But before that even happened, our own appeal is that the government should release those that were arbitrarily detained, because we are aware, we have evidence that a lot of people were actually detained arbitrarily, illegally, because participating in a peaceful protest is not a crime in Mozambique. And they were just exercising their civil right of assembling, protesting.
Zenaida, did you try to reach the police? Because my understanding is that the police were saying that perhaps the route of the protest was closer to the presidential building. Did the police say why they stopped the protesters?
No. I mean, the police did not say why they stopped. They did not provide an explanation. But the usual position from them is that the protest was illegal, and that wasn't the right moment to protest. But those are arbitrary decisions of the security forces. There's nowhere in the Mozambican laws that have anything similar to not the right time to protest, or explains the illegality of a protest in the terms that some of the police spokespeople have come out to justify.
Zenaida Machado is Human Rights Watch senior researcher for Africa. She was speaking with us from Mozambique's capital, Maputo. The Zarat Katilim Bank of Turkish on Sunday became the first foreign bank to open a branch in Somalia in decades. Reporter Harun Maruf of the U.S. Somali Service spoke to Somalia Central Bank Governor Abdulrahman Mohamed Abdullahi about the potential of the new bank.
This is a very significant event. I would rather say it's a historic moment for all of us in Somalia. And Turkish Katalin Bank has opened its branch in Mogadishu. And this marks more than 50 years at the first international bank that comes to the country. We welcome the investment and the establishment of the branch of Ziraat Bank. It will boost our financial sector, create jobs. It will attract or facilitate investments. And also, it will significantly contribute to the cross-border payments that we have been struggling in the past to find cross-border bank relations for our local banks. But now, once we have an international bank, we believe this will significantly contribute to that area as well.
When is this bank going to be operational in the country?
The bank was granted a license, banking license, in July 22, and they have been working since to operationalize the branch. So today marks the official ceremony, but also the bank is fully operational.
Somalia Central Bank Governor.
Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the results of matches played on Sunday in the first leg of the semi-finals of the CAF Africa Football League. Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa claimed a vital 1-0 home win over Al Ahly of Egypt in Pretoria on Sunday. A second half thunderbolt from Chapelo Maseko sealed victory for the South Africans, who largely bossed proceedings against Egyptian giants at the Loftus-Versfeld Stadium. In the other semi-final played in Morocco, a second-half goal from Hisham Bousfiani earned Morocco's wydad Casablanca a 1-0 home victory over Tunisian side Osporans in the first leg of their Crunch Africa Football League semi-final. Bousfiani found the breakthrough just before the hour mark at the start Mohamed V as Wydad claimed a slender advantage to take into Wednesday's return fixture in Tunis. And now to rugby, where reactions have continued to pour in as defending champion South Africa kicked its way to a record fourth Rugby World Cup title by beating New Zealand 12-11 on Saturday. Hadre Pollard, who wasn't named in the Springboks' initial Rugby World Cup squad, scored all of South Africa's points to retain their Rugby World Cup title in Paris, which repeated its 1995 success over New Zealand and denied the All Blacks their own chance to win a fourth title in their record fifth final. Back home in South Africa, people of the Eastern Cape, the home province of Springboks captain Siya Kolisi, believe the World Cup victory will inspire more players from the suburbs to play for the Springboks.
I mean, I was born and bred in PE, went to the same school as him, so it's even more emotional. He's representing all of us. It's not just anyone, but he's literally a dream come true.
This brings hope to a black child, and seeing Siya Kolisi is an idol for young boys playing sport. It means that they have hope and they can go further in life.
The success of the township rugby is fundamental. This is exactly what you wish. Usia is presenting the local rugby.
Kolisi made history on Saturday by becoming the first Springboks captain to win back-to-back World Cup tournaments. And now to boxing, where WBC heavyweight champion Tyson Fury claimed a controversial split decision victory over former UFC champion Francis Ngannou in Saudi Arabia. The Cameroonian put Fury on the canvas in round three after connecting with a left hook.
I was really looking forward to win this fight, but I do learn a lot about the sport. You know, this is really my first time.
And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, October 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.